Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for Debtwire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Spotlight on Chicago Public Schools. I'm joined by my Debtwire Muni colleague, Stephanie Fagnani. Stephanie, always good to have you on the podcast.
It's always good to be back with you, Paul.
And also joining us for the first time is Justin Marlowe. Justin wears a lot of hats. He's a professor at the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy, where he also serves as director of the Center for Municipal Finance and the editor of the Municipal Finance Journal. He's published several books and dozens of academic articles on many areas of municipal finance, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Public Debt Management, Strategy and Evidence. And finally, he's the co-host with journalist Liz Farmer of the Public Money Pod podcast. Justin, when do you sleep, first of all?
Whenever I can.
Seriously, thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to this podcast. And part of the reason I went over your extensive background is that you are an expert in public finance, and you're on the ground in Chicago. And today we want to talk a little bit about Chicago public schools. And I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie to get the first question started.
Welcome, Justin. Thank you for joining us. I know that Chicago public schools has been all over the news in recent months and even last couple of years due to things like their large projected budget deficits, outstanding pension payments, lots of battles between the city mayor, CPS leadership, Chicago's teachers union, all that sort of stuff. Can you just give us a little bit of history as to kind of what's been going on with Chicago public schools over the last decade or so that's brought it to the point it's at right now?
Sure. Well, so first and foremost, thanks for the chance to talk to you today. It's great that the work that you all do is so important, bringing a spotlight to Muni credit questions, kind of an often overlooked space. So I'm I'll call myself a longtime listener, first time caller. So I appreciate the chance to visit today. I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind when we think about the context for the current battles going on in Chicago. I always try to remind people of a couple of things. Number one, that the Chicago Public Schools has lost somewhere around 120,000 students in the last two decades or thereabouts. That's about a 20% decline in enrollment from about 2002 to the present. And in many ways, that sets the stage for a lot of the battles that are ongoing financially within CPS and the way that CPS relates to the city of Chicago writ large. Even though they've lost enrollment, they've also seen their overall cost per student increase by something like 50%. So we've seen declining enrollment, increasing costs, and today, on a per pupil basis, CPS spends about as much per student as some incredibly high cost districts like Los Angeles and San Francisco, where the cost of living is obviously very different from Chicago. So that kind of sets the stage for some big questions about what CPS can and should do. Is its business model working? Does it need as many teachers as it has? And layered into all of that, of course, is the Chicago Teachers Union, which is an incredibly potent force in local politics. And so that combination of sort of declining enrollment and a questionable business model against a very powerful political force advocating for CPS has set up some pretty strong differences of opinion, we'll just say, over the last several years about what to do with the city's budget vis-a-vis CPS and what CPS should do with its budget. The most recent dust-up was around the fiscal 26 budget, which was passed just a couple of weeks ago. CPS is on a September fiscal year, and that they had a roughly $1 billion deficit and no clear way to try to address that deficit. In the weeks leading up to that budget fight, there was several large changes in the governance of CPS. It has for a long time operated under a structure where the mayor essentially appoints the school board. A few years ago, there was a ballot initiative that was designed to pivot toward an elected school board. Eventually, that will be the case. We're in the middle of that transition right now, where roughly half the board is being appointed by the mayor and roughly half is elected. And so there's a kind of interesting power dynamic happening there. At the moment, it looks as though the mayor's influence is waning. Several of the appointees that he had put in place relatively early in his term decided to resign in response to one of his initial proposals for what to do about that $1 billion deficit, which essentially required a lot of short-term borrowing. Since then, the several of those board members have, you know, either left or been replaced by members who are more in line with the mayor's concerns. But at the same time, there's also been a fight with the superintendent. Pedro Martinez, the longtime superintendent of CPS, was at odds with the mayor over all things financial. He ultimately left. The interim CEO that was put in place by the mayor, ultimately then, as part of this budget fight, also rebuffed the mayor's plan to borrow and to try to address that budget shortfall. And so it's been a pretty stunning rebuke of both the mayor and the Chicago Teachers Union, for whom the mayor is in effect a creature of. He was a teacher. He was an organizer for the Teachers Union before he was in elected politics, and it's clearly is closely connected to them. So it's really raising big questions, not just about CPS and its finances, but about kind of the political dynamics within the city of Chicago, which makes it that much more interesting and that much more potent, question day to day. At the moment, they've passed a budget. That budget depends on a sizable increase in tax increment financing revenues. TIF districts are, of course, a very big deal in Chicago. Every year, there's TIF districts that have more money than they need or more money they can spend, and so that money gets swept. CPS's budget for the coming year depends pretty heavily on TIF sweeps, which are not a given, right? There's questions about whether those property taxes will actually appear. And so at the moment, you have that combination of, you know, lots of financial pressure, uncertain revenue sources, an interesting political dynamic, and all of that coming together to make for some very interesting watching from afar.
So given all of this, for lack of a better word, drama that CPS has seen over all these years, how is it, you know, why do you think this district's standing in the munis world has kind of survived with really little to no impact on trading? I mean, I think there's even been a credit downgrade or two in there somewhere. Do investors ever become weary of Chicago public schools?
Yeah, it is quite a thing to watch. You know, we keep our own price index, municipal price index, here at our Center for Municipal Finance, and it's been interesting to watch how prices on CPS bonds, for the most part, have really not changed in about the last 18 months, despite all the drama that we just mentioned. There has been a little bit of widening on certain spreads, particularly for some of their longer dated paper, but it's absolutely not investors running for the exits the way that you might think they would, given all of that drama. I think there's kind of two things that certainly you hear about when you talk to investors and to traders about CPS. One is there's an underlying belief that despite the flaws with its business model, that its revenue sources are actually quite stable. It depends roughly 2/3 of the district's budget comes from property taxes, about 1/3 from the state. And that property tax revenue obviously is relatively stable. And there's a belief, I think, among a lot of investors that despite claims to the contrary, that businesses and homeowners are not going to flee Chicago anytime soon just because of concerns about high property taxes. People don't like to pay high property taxes, but there's no evidence that they're leaving in droves because of that. So there's a sense that if necessary, CPS could probably access more property tax revenue if it had to, even though it hasn't necessarily pushed that button just yet. There's also a belief that the state will, if necessary, support CPS. They've been at odds at times going back several years when Governor Rauner was very much at odds with the CPS leadership. That tension has subsided quite a bit. I don't know that anybody sees Governor Pritzker as a huge ally of CPS, but he's certainly not adversarial to them the way that some past governors have been. And so I think there is a belief that if things really became difficult, that the state could become more of an advocate and try to negotiate some sort of maybe not a bailout, but some temporary relief and maybe some intervention that might help to see a way through some of these more immediate acute budget concerns. So that investors, at least for the near term, seem to be taking a lot of comfort in those two factors. Of course, the problem is, as we know, you don't know that your access to the credit markets is gone until it's gone. And I think that's the concern that a lot of people close to CPS have, is that we might be closer to the precipice of not having access to the capital markets, but you won't know until you go to the market and find out that you don't. And hopefully that's not the case, but certainly a lot of the measurables would suggest we're closer to that than not.
Justin, I want to talk about another challenge that, and it's not just Chicago Public Schools. There's a couple other jurisdictions that face it, but Chicago Public Schools has a pretty significant pension liability. And as an outsider looking in, it seems like they're okay with this perpetually unfunded liability. How big of a problem is that for Chicago Public Schools going forward? Or is it not really much a problem at all, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a complicated set of concerns. So just, I mean, it's by way of facts at the outset. So as of fiscal 24, at the end of fiscal 24, the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund, which is the main teacher pension fund, was about 48% funded. It's about a $14 billion unfunded liability. Now, for most pension funds, you would look at that and say, well, that's a real problem. But you can't forget that this is situated in the context of Chicago public finance, in which case the CPS pension fund is actually quite well funded relative to the police and firefighters and the municipal laborers and the city pension funds. And so I think in a weird way, that takes some pressure off of CPS's pension concerns, which in any other setting would be seen as a huge crisis that needs to be addressed right away. The other, I think, kind of mitigating factor is the role of the state. The Chicago Teachers Pension is a little bit unique in that the state is legally required to make really the normal cost contribution. So that's between half and two thirds, depending on the circumstances. And the state has generally made that contribution. Some would argue it hasn't made enough, or it hasn't been as timely as it should be. But there's help there from the state in a way that there is not for the city and other pension funds that get a lot of attention. That said, a lot of proponents of CPS would argue that the state should do even more. Chicago is the only school district in the state where the state effectively does not cover most or all of those pension contributions. And so that is a perennial set of questions about whether the state could do more. I talked a second ago about potential state interventions. That could be one. The state could agree to just take on a larger share of those costs. And there's opponents to that and some real trade-offs potentially that surround all of that. But that said, it's under most circumstances, you would say that that's a huge concern, but it does not seem to be, at least at the moment, within the city of Chicago. There's also some demographic sorts of trends that I think take some of the pressure off of that. When you look at some of the actuarial estimates for what's been happening in the teacher pension fund recently, there's reason to believe that those costs have kind of peaked, that the demographic trend going forward will be lower costs, maybe not dramatically lower costs, but at least you won't see costs increase. All of that, of course, assuming that the market continues to do well and that the asset side of the equation for the teacher pension fund performs well, which of course is always a question mark. But it's interesting that it's not a bigger concern than some would think it should be. A related concern, though, regarding pension funds generally is this interesting twist we have. Remember that the mayor has appointed the school board for many years, and so there are all sorts of financial entanglements between Chicago Public Schools and the city. One of them is that there are several Chicago Public Schools employees who are members of the city of Chicago's municipal employee pension fund. Essentially, a lot of the non-teaching staff, custodians and others, are part of the city pension fund. And so for years, there's been back and forth on who has the obligation to make those pension contributions. A real source of friction in the most recent city budget, or in the most recent CPS budget debate, was whether the city should pick up the several hundred million dollar contribution for this year for those particular employees, or whether CPS would do it. The mayor, of course, given that the city has its own financial concerns, was saying that the CPS should pick it up. CPS leaned on legal precedent and said, we don't need to do that. The budget they passed for fiscal 26 does not include this contribution to the municipal employees pension fund on behalf of CPS employees. So we'll have to see how that continues as part of that long transition to a wholly elected school board. Those financial entanglements are going to need to be worked out. And a lot of that revolves around pensions. So that's absolutely something to watch, and something I know that a lot of investors are watching closely to see how they untangle that in the years to come.
So Justin, we've talked a lot about Chicago Public Schools, obviously, but I think this conversation wouldn't be complete without extending it out to the city of Chicago. Because like when we look at Chicago, we think of it like the Chicago Credit Complex. There's the city of Chicago, the Chicago Public Schools, there's Cook County, and then there's obviously the state of Illinois. And, you know, not that long ago, there was another Midwest city that faced an array of challenges. That'd be the city of Detroit, ended up filing for municipal bankruptcy, then got out of bankruptcy. I'm not suggesting that city of Chicago is about to go into bankruptcy or is in danger of that. But from your perspective, being somebody that on the ground that lives in that region, how fair or unfair is a comparison between Detroit and Chicago?
You'll definitely hear people on both sides of that comparison in Chicago. There are undoubtedly folks, particularly in the business community, who look at what happened in Detroit, and it raises real concerns for them that Chicago... I think the takeaway from the Detroit story was that things can go badly and you feel like you're able to get through it year over year until you're suddenly not able to. And that's the concern I think that a lot of people in Chicago have is that things will get very bad very quickly if we're not careful. So in that sense, the Detroit case seems like it might be instructive. On the other hand, there's a lot of people who say that that's really an apples to oranges comparison. And that's certainly, I think, my own view. In the Detroit case, what you really had was, you could argue, an economic crisis. The auto industry essentially leaving Detroit, massive depopulation, and the city never really recovered from the kind of body blow that it took to its economy in the 70s and 80s. And then there was a governance problem that followed that. They couldn't figure out what to do about that loss of tax revenue, that loss of jobs, and city employment became a real basically one of the safe havens for a lot of people, and they were reluctant to make cuts or spend less in city services, which increased taxes, which created this sort of death spiral that ultimately ended in bankruptcy. Chicago has in many ways the opposite problem. What we have really is a governance problem against the backdrop of what is, as it turns out, a really healthy economy. When you look at the Chicagoland region, it has all the things that businesses are looking for. It has clean water. It has a great workforce. It has access to reliable electricity, things that we kind of take for granted. But in a sort of climate risk era, those are things that matter more and more to business. So in some sense, the economic fundamentals for the region are really strong. And the problem, despite all that, is that decision makers in Chicago, at the city, at CPS, at Cook County, can't seem to get out of their own way. They can't seem to find a way to say, let's make a long-term plan. Let's ask tough questions about how much city government, CPS, the county should do, what we're willing to pay for those services. Let's have a clear plan for what we're going to do with property taxes, what we're going to do with other revenues. The thing that the business community hates the most is just the uncertainty, the kind of herky-jerky feeling of this year we're going to raise property taxes, next year we're not. All of those, that just kind of unpredictability is not very conducive to planning and economic growth. And so that's the way forward in many ways for Chicago, is to figure out those governance issues. Some think that if you can't figure out those governance issues, then the economic driver for the region will be harmed and may even stop. And there's maybe some evidence to suggest that's the case. But I think the much bigger question with Chicago is, how do we figure out a way to make good decisions, good forward-looking decisions, and frankly, a political culture that has really struggled to do that. You have 50 alders in 50 wards. Again, CPS is in the midst of this massive governance shift. It's going to take some time for those kind of governance questions to be sorted out. But if Chicago can do that, then it'll be just fine. In fact, it may even be able to fully capitalize on all of the wonderful assets that its economy has to offer. And that would, of course, be very, very different than the outcome in Detroit.
And one last follow-up question, because since you brought up the issue of governance, I'm fascinated by the fact that you have a mayor that was part of the labor union movement, or apparatus, I should say, that became the mayor. Are you surprised or not surprised at that relationship? Because I would have thought the relationship would have been better, that they would have been able to work together in a bit more collaborative faction, and it doesn't... it seems to have been worse than as if he had never been in a labor union and never been involved. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think people close to that action say that there's you have to draw a really clear distinction between the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools. We tend to conflate them, but I think a lot of the leadership, particularly the kind of technical management, sort of bureaucratic leadership within CPS, has in many ways a different agenda, has a different plan for what CPS ought to do compared to the Teachers Union. One of the big deliverables that the mayor had for the teachers union was a new contract that was signed last year. That was a sizable wage increase. I mean, in many ways, he sort of delivered on his promise that they were going to bring CPS, Chicago Teachers Union wages in line with their peers. Now that that's done, I think there's a question of, well, what else can be delivered and how do they get everyone on the same page about what the financial way forward might be? And that's where the mayor's relationship with CPS writ large seems to have really broken down. It'll be interesting to see too. Many have looked at the way that the recent CPS budget fight went down as a real rebuke, not just of the mayor, but of the political power of the Chicago Teachers Union. And there's questions about whether they can turn people out the way that they used to be able to, whether they'll have the same influence in the upcoming city election. It's interesting sort of turning of the tides politically. It's not quite clear who steps in if they step out, but at the moment, it's not a given that they are going to dictate the terms of local politics in Chicago the way they did maybe a year or two ago.
Justin and Stephanie, thanks so much for a riveting discussion on the challenges facing Chicago public schools. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.